Hey, happy Memorial Day to you. Yay, happy Memorial Day. It's a day off from work is pretty much what it is. Kids don't go to school. You don't go to work. Whatever day it is, Memorial Day, you name your holiday. If I don't have to go to work, kids don't have to go to school, it's a holiday, and that's the end of it. We don't really care what it is. But we are supposed to honor those that defended our country and lost their lives accordingly, or anything that they suffered accordingly. This is what we remember. Memorial Day is remembering. So, how do we celebrate? We barbecue things. That's what we do. That's how we do it. There are three barbecue holidays. This is the first. This is Memorial Day. And then you have your July 4th. That's another big barbecue holiday. And then you squeeze in Labor Day as if it's still viable. And that's your third barbecue holiday. So you got three barbecue holidays here in a row, separated by about a month apart, sometimes 2 months. Barbecuing is quite an interesting concept. It's, I believe, the way that our forefathers ate food. Now, not necessarily on a barbecue grill, but they cooked everything over fire. They barbecued brontosauruses. Actually, dinosaurs and cavemen didn't coexist. They were from different time periods. Although, if you watch the Flintstones, that would totally mess you up as far as reality is concerned. So will following the president. That also messes you up reality-wise. But that's not my point here. It's cooking over fire in a primitive fashion is still what we do on these holidays. So what are you going to do on Memorial Day? You're going to fire up the grill, whether it be gas or coal, and you're going to throw a hot dog on there or a hamburger or a steak or the kids. You just barbecue everything in sight. Hey, what are you doing? You want to be barbecued? Come on over here. We barbecue everything. Everything. We put a little bit of sauce on it, and it's all barbecuable. Put a little of that mesquite sauce on it. I don't even know what mesquite sauce is. Is that a sauce made from squeezing a lot of mosquitoes? Mosquitoes. Oh, geez. You take a whole bunch of mosquitoes, and you squeeze them, and that's mesquite sauce. Am I correct there? Am I correct, or am I wrong? I'm wrong! What about tartar sauce? What the hell's up with that thing, huh? You go to the dentist and they scale the tartar out from between your teeth. And then they ask you to spit in a sink. I have a feeling that's what tartar sauce is. I'm not eating tartar sauce. That's disgusting. I might eat my own tartar, but I'm not eating somebody else's tartar. That's like really not a good idea. Tartar sauce is basically sweet relish, pickled relish, and mayonnaise. Why do they call it tartar sauce? Does it look like the stuff that comes from out from between your teeth when a dentist is scaling your teeth? Why do they call it that? Why would you bother calling it something like that? That's disgusting. But you don't think about that, do you? Well, it's time to throw everything on the grill. I've said many times on this show, my secret pleasure is hot dogs. They're horrible for you. I don't even know what I'm eating. I have no idea what that damn thing is. It's oblong and it's tasty. It's filled with sodium, filled with fat, filled with parts of the animal that you didn't even know the animal had. I don't know what I'm eating on that animal. They chop it up. They put it into an intestine. That's always a culinary great idea. Let's just take chopped up meat from hoofs and penises and eyelids and just chop it up, throw sodium in there, and hey, how about some nitrates? That'll kill them. That'll kill the people. Put nitrates in it too. And then let's see, how can we make it extremely disgusting? Let's shove it into an intestine. How about that? And then try to sell it. Bob will never be able to sell something like that. Are you kidding me? Who's going to eat that crap? That is pure, unadulterated crap shoved into an intestine. And it's phallic and it's everything wrong. It will kill people for sure. Let's market it and see what happens. Well, end of story. I mean, what's going on with that? We love hot dogs. It's my guilty pleasure. I like hot dogs so much, I don't even have to drown it in mustard and relish and ketchup and onions. I don't need to do that. Chili, you name it. You can put anything on a hot dog. I don't even need to do that. That's how much I like hot dogs, but they are killers. There's a festival they have, Coney Island, in New York and Queens, and they do it in other places around the world as well, where they have hot dog eating contests, and they have these contestants eat as many hot dogs as humanly possible. And I think he's Chinese or something. There's this guy, and he's not big fat guy. He's a skinny guy. He eats like 10,000 hot dogs, and he always wins. And I'm just surprised he shows up every year. Because at that point, you've got to be so sick of hot dogs, it's not funny. Like, I never want to see another hot dog. I don't even want to look down in my pants and see my penis, because that reminds me of a hot dog. And I can't. I just can't anymore. I don't even say the word hot dog. How about Frankfurter? No, don't say that either. But somehow this guy shows up, not only for that reason, but because he's still alive. I kind of figured by now he would surely be dead. But I don't know. Some people just weather this stuff. I have no idea how. You like those little cocktail weenies? They're little miniature hot dogs. They're as if they weren't bad enough. They wrap them in dough, which will not only kill you, but make sure that you stay dead. I mean, you don't want to eat all these hot dogs and then still like be in a coma. No, the dough wrapped around the hot dog makes sure you are deceased for good. You're not even going to come back in a second life. You're not going to be reincarnated. This'll just do it. Like, completely. That's it. You're not going to heaven. You're not going to hell. You are just laying there. You are done, finished. That's what they make sure. And again, thrown in the nitrates, that just makes it doubly, no question sure, that you are just dead. But we have I started the show yet?
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah, they're weird enough already.
Whatever.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Really?
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very, very much, Julie. You're wonderful. Excuse me while I have a hot dog.
There's nothing more American than a hot dog. And this summer, we will eat over 23 million hot dogs in Major League ballparks alone. That's enough to stretch coast to coast from Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles to Camden Yards in Baltimore. But did you know hot dogs, also called Frankfurters, were first created using pork in Frankfurt, Germany in 1852? And hot dog champion Joey Jaws Chestnut set his world record in 2009 eating 68 hot dogs in just 10 minutes.
Asshole.
But on average, an adult in the United States consumes 70 hot dogs a year. So maybe it's about time you learn what the heck is actually in all those hot dogs. The most popular hot dogs are either made from beef, pork, or both, fat, and lots of it, salt. Check out how many words start with sodium on that label, and lots of chemicals. Hot dogs are prepared commercially in huge vats where rapidly moving blades grind and mix these ingredients with spices. This mixture is then forced through tubes into casings for cooking. Now, most hot dogs you purchase at the store are pre-cooked and they're ready to eat, but people tend to boil, grill, or microwave them at home. And we all know that dogs aren't considered a diet food, obviously, but how unhealthy are they? Well, despite the first ingredient being meat, hot dogs are not a great source of protein. In fact, one typical hot dog only has the equivalent of this measly 3/4 ounce piece of lean steak. Each hot dog is about 250 calories. 70 to 80% of those calories are pure fat. And that's before you even consider any of the toppings. Now, like other processed meats, hot dogs are loaded with sodium, which we know raises our blood pressure.
Yep.
Ugh. A 2010 study conducted by researchers at Harvard found that eating one serving a day of processed meat, that's the equivalent of one single hot dog, has been linked to a 42% increased risk in heart disease and a 19% increased risk for diabetes.
Wow.
So does this mean that you have to go cold turkey on hot dogs?
Yes.
If you're a Francophile, you don't need to take this to the total extreme and never eat another hot dog ever again. But my advice is to save them for those special occasions at the ballpark when it's part of the experience. You don't want to make hot dogs regular features in your grocery cart or staples in your kids' diet. And when you do treat yourself to hot dogs, try looking for brands that are lower in fat and sodium. Now that you know what the heck you're eating, proceed with caution.
Oy. See, I told you. Careful. You be careful. So I named the three hot dog holidays, Memorial Day, July 4th, Labor Day, and if you go to a ballpark, you have to have a hot dog. And actually, they actually named a brand after ballparks called Ballpark Hot Dogs. Duh. A great marketing scheme there. Or if you go to a carnival or a fair or something like that, they're going to have hot dog stands. You always want to have a hot dog. It's just part of Americana. So there you go. Be very, very careful, though. I mean, I'm serious. I really, you know, I don't want you to say this after you have a hot dog.
It was unbelievably painful.
That's not a good idea.
Ron Van Dam.
Yes.
Master of the ancient art of talking to yourself as if there was actually someone listening.
Well, that's not funny.
This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Hot dogs have been around forever. They are a part of Americana. There's no question about it. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite television commercials was about hot dogs. Do you remember this?
Hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. What kind of kids eat Armor hot dogs?
Step right up.
Fat kids, skinny kids, kids who climb on racks. Tough kids.
Even kids with chicken pox love hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. The dogs kids eat day or night.
Sad kids, funny kids, kids who fly a kite. Big kids, little kids, kids who like to fight. Love hot dogs,
Armor hot dogs.
The dogs kids love to fight.
When man bites dog, that's news they say. But when kids bite dogs, they yell,
hooray for hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. The dogs, kids love to fight.
Kids, I know. Hot dogs. number two on the lineup of normal, easy barbecue stuff are hamburgers. Now, those are a little bit more palatable because the grease and the fat from the hamburger actually drips into the grill and you're not eating as much fat. So that's not as bad. So you might want to go hamburger route, except for this.
Sure, I like a good burger. But for me, sometimes the best part of the burger gets left on the grill. That's why I'm headed to Burger Guy to try their new Big Gristle Deluxe. A full half pound of hand-scraped grill-hardened gristle, machine-pressed into a greasy patty, and smothered with Burger Guy's signature something-like-cheese sauce. And for a limited time, it's just $5.99 with a metric ton of fries and keg of soda. Sound good? Yeah, no kidding, huh? Hey, I'll see you at Burger Guy.
For a limited time only at participating Burger Guy restaurants. Please consult with your physician before ingesting reconstituted meat byproducts such as gristle. Burger Guy's something like cheese sauce has not been entirely approved for human consumption by the FDA.
One of the outdoor activities at barbecues is an activity that I never really, really mastered, and that's the art of the Frisbee. Are you into that thing? That's a plastic disc. Thank God it's plastic. If it was made out of, like, metal, it would kill people. It's a plastic disc, and you throw it back and forth, but you have to throw it properly in order to get backward and forward spin at the same time. You flick your wrist, and it glides through the air. But if you don't know how to do it, that sucker can end up like in Cambodia. You fling it, and there's a guy standing there like maybe 10 feet away, but that Frisbee just like takes off on vacation. It's just, you don't know where the hell that thing went. I've lost about 2,000 Frisbees, and someone has to go chasing it. That's the other thing I don't like, tennis. I used to play tennis with a friend of mine, John. As a matter of fact, he does the comedy commercials and all the funny stuff on this show. And we used to play tennis every once in a while. This is when I was younger, when I could still stand up, basically. when like running maybe 10 feet didn't make me have a coronary. That was when I was a little bit more athletic. So we used to play tennis together. And I was also very, very skinny back then. So it was very, very different. So we play tennis. And it was tough for me to play tennis because I have nothing to wear that's tennis-like whatsoever. I don't. I had a pair of sneakers then. And they were Velcro, so I still look like an asshole. But they were sneakers nonetheless. And that was all I had. I had nothing else athletic. I know nothing else athletic at all. I had some t-shirts, you know, but and jeans. I don't think I owned any shorts. I had no white socks. I own nothing. I own nothing but sneakers athletic-wise. So I was not fit to play wardrobe wise, and of course in our society you must have the proper wardrobe, otherwise you cannot play. So we would play tennis. Here was the problem with tennis. The tennis is in a court, and there's a fence around it usually. But if you miss a shot and the ball goes by you, you have to run and get the ball. All of my exercise in playing tennis is not playing tennis, it's running to get the ball. And the ball isn't always just like a couple of feet away from your shoes. The ball is in the next town over by the time you catch it. Now you're chasing a ball down the street, down a hill. This is my exercise, chasing a ball. Tennis to me has nothing to do with the racket. It has nothing to do with the net. It has nothing to do with agility, aim, accuracy, nothing. The ability to play tennis is giving up the time to go chasing the ball all over the place. I'm not into ball chasing activities. I don't play sports because inevitably you have to go chasing a ball to get it back. The one sport I like, which I despise, is bowling. Because you throw the ball down the alley and you don't have to get it. You can miss every single pin ever stood up by man. No matter what happens, they deliver the ball back to you. It flows down the aisle, it comes up through a chute, and it lands right in front of your fingers. What a wonderful concept that is! Bowling itself, the sport, sucks. It's a horrible, horrible, boring, ridiculous, expensive sport. But I love the fact that the ball comes right back to you. To me, that's everything. That's everything. Let's get all sports to have automatic ball returns. I think that would be wonderful. I think we can all be on the same page with that. Or I don't know how many pages you have. Anyway, let's move on. Today, my guest, this has to do with food allergies. I know we all have allergies. We sneeze a little bit, you know, and the hay fever and the grass and all that. But for some people, allergies is like a real serious thing. To the point where there's certain foods that you can't even eat. I alluded to this a little while ago on a previous show, and today is the interview with this doctor and this person that actually is affected by food allergies, and I thought it'd be pretty interesting to do that on a day where you're just throwing everything on the grill. What the hell, right? Well, you still have to be careful if you have the food allergies. So here we go. We're saying hello to Dr. Hernandez Trujillo, and Emily S. joins us as well. The doctor is with the Allergy and Immunology Care Center of South Florida, very prestigious practice, and we're talking about allergies, but of a different sort. I have allergies, and sometimes I sneeze or my eyes get itchy, but it can become more than that. It can become quite serious and threatening, I understand.
It can, Ron, and thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to talk during Food Allergy Awareness Week about food allergies.
Well, food allergies, you know, I didn't hear much about food allergies until this decade. Before that, now in the restaurant, the server says, are there any allergies we should be concerned about, etc. The concern and the awareness of this is a fairly new thing, I think.
You're absolutely right. There have been increasing numbers of patients with food allergy. And certainly in the United States, there's approximately 6 million children between the ages of 0 and 17 who have food allergies. And there are increasing numbers of emergency room visits for those between the ages of 0 to 4.
Have there always been food allergy serious concerns, or is it now that we're aware of them publicly?
I think it's a combination of both, and it's interesting because without a doubt, studies do report there's increasing numbers, and, you know, it can be, part of it may be that we're recognizing them more, but I do believe that there are many, many factors that may be contributing, which we haven't completely identified. I will say the good news, recent studies have shown that delaying solid food introduction in infants may actually put those children at risk for developing later allergy. So now we have more recent guidelines by the National Institutes of Health that recommend earlier introduction, as early as 4 to 6 months for some infants, with foods like peanuts. And what I recommend is that, you know, anyone that has an infant, certainly speak to your pediatrician about, you know, what group your child would fall into and at what age there should be introduction, because we're hoping that by introducing earlier, we may be preventing some of the children from developing the food allergy.
Okay. Now, Emily is with us?
Correct, yes.
Hi, Emily. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you.
Emily is a mother, and your story is connected here. You've actually gone through this traumatic experience, I understand, with your son.
Correct. Yeah, Nicholas was diagnosed with life-threatening food allergies at 6 months old. Mm-hmm. The symptoms started when he was around 2 months old. He had eczema and some tummy troubles, and so I took him to our pediatrician, who thought that it might be food-related, mm-hmm. and we took several things out of my diet, but that did not seem to help, and so she referred us to an allergist, and at 6 months old, he was diagnosed with a severe peanut allergy, mm-hmm. and then unfortunately, at 11 months old, we added tree nuts, eggs, dairy, and wheat to the list of things that he's allergic to as well.
Yeah, how's he doing?
He's doing great. We actually have had an anaphylactic reaction and an opportunity to use the AviQ. We're coming up on just about the year anniversary of that, but fortunately we were prepared both with the medication, and I felt like I was prepared, you know, research and education wise, you know, as prepared as you can be for something like that.
Sure.
But 2 weeks after that he started preschool and he has done fantastic.
Great. Good to hear. So, doctor, there are, of course, treatments, as we've just heard, that have become quite successful, and I guess that's always a developing situation where they become more successful as time goes on.
Absolutely. We're excited. Now, AviQ 0.1 milligrams is available. It's the first and only epinephrine auto-injector mm-hmm. designed for infants and small children between 16 and a half to 33 pounds, with life-threatening food allergy. And as I tell all the parents of my patients, if this medication is ever used, if there's an anaphylactic reaction, immediately after using the epinephrine auto-injector, you should seek emergency medical care.
Yeah. You know, also, thank God for specialties. You know, when I was growing up, there was a guy who lived down the street, and he had a separate entrance to his house, and that was the doctor. And very efficient. I think he smoked cigarettes, actually, if I recall. But very efficient. But specialists, I don't think my family knew what they were at that time. And now this is kind of comparatively wonderful.
First of all, you made my day because this is my life's work. Uh-huh. And I agree with you. I actually had many allergies and asthma as a young child, mm-hmm. and our pediatrician took care of everything. But you're right, things are advancing and we're learning more, and it's an opportunity for the specialists and the pediatric allergists to help our families and our patients.
Great. Can food allergies develop later on in life as well, or are most of them discovered as infants?
No, it is not unusual for food allergy to develop. So in myself, actually, I've developed a shrimp, peanut, and tree nut allergy as an adult. So I can tell you that that is not unusual, and it's very important, the same way that I would tell parents to seek, you know, medical care and speak to their primary doctor, for adults to do the same.
Can on the alternative, can they shift away from an allergy, and can allergies diminish themselves?
Yeah, so in particular, today we're talking about younger children.
Yeah.
There are many foods that will eventually, you know, be outgrown, sometimes mm-hmm. sooner, sometimes later. Milk, egg, mm-hmm. Soy, there are some foods. Other foods are not as likely to be outgrown.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, absolutely. Especially when you're younger, and foods like milk and egg, which are the most common causes of food allergy in the youngest children, they eventually will be outgrown in most of the patients.
Okay. A lot of infants, if they eat fruit, strawberries, etc., will develop rashes. Is that an onslaught of something, or is that fairly common?
So that's a very good question. It really depends on the patient. Some patients may just have a little bit of a rash, and then it never progresses, and in others, it may progress. So those patients definitely should speak to their pediatrician.
Great. Well, Emily, I'm glad things are working out, and it's great that you have this kind of support. And doctor, thanks for doing what you do. How do we get more information about this?
Absolutely. For more information, you can visit aviq.com. That's AUVIQ.com. And there's more information there about life-threatening allergies and the AviQ 0.1 milligram.
Great. Good to speak to the both of you. Have a great day.
Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well, wow. Huh? That's a wow. That's wow. All right. I'm going to leave you alone for a little while, but I'll be back tomorrow with a brand new show. Until then, have a wonderful holiday, and I wish you peace. Want a hot dog? All right, how many people want hot dogs? How many people want hamburgers? Raise your hand if you want a hamburger. One, two, three, four. How many, okay. How many people want a sausage? How many people want a sausage? Raise your hand if you want a sausage. How many of you want to have an extramarital affair? Raise your hand. Extramarital affairs, anybody? One, two, three, four. Okay, raise your hand.